If you haven't already read Dark Emu, chances are there's someone in your life badgering you to do it already. It's a book that seeks to untangle colonial myths from historical truths that at the time of colonisation, Australia's Indigenous people were not purely hunter-gatherers. They were agriculturalists who farmed land and formed villages. Bruce Pascoe is the author of Dark Emu, Agriculture or Accident, among many other books. Today he spoke at the Progress 2019 conference, and yesterday he gave a keynote speech at the Lowitja International Health and Wellbeing Conference in Darwin, and he joins us now. Bruce, thank you for your time.
It's a pleasure.
Why was it important for you to speak at these two conferences?
Well, Aboriginal people have been wanting to have this conversation with Australia for a long time, and we've been complaining that Australia didn't want to hear our story. Now that Australia has decided that it does want to have this discussion, we can't back away from it. So a lot of Aboriginal people are very busy, but that is our role, our duty.
What's shifted?
Look, it's a great question. Perhaps it's generational. Perhaps the generation that clung to the idea of colonial Australia is no longer driving the agenda. I'm not sure. That might be too cruel an assumption. But whatever has happened, I'm getting a lot of interest from young Australians about the history of their country. And it's refreshing to be able to talk about these things without having to bang a drum. People seem more ready to listen than they have been before.
During your keynote speech at the Lowitja conference yesterday, you told a story of the artist Jonathan Jones. Mm. He read Dark Emu and then visited the National Museum of Australia. What happened next?
Well, he wanted to find out what holdings the museum had of Aboriginal tools and implements. And he was stunned by the amount of material that it was held by the museum and had never been displayed to the public, presumably because it was seen of little interest. And yet he uncovered stones that were too heavy to use for too long above the waist and had right angle handles attached to them. So they were picks. They were used between the legs as a soil turning tool. This is a revelation in Australian life, and it stuns me that for all the history that has been taught to our students over 230 years, it was decided that this was of no interest to Australian children. So it was with some dismay that I got that news from Jonathan. But it's also exciting because it opens up the possibility that Australian students sitting at their desks and tables will have a much more interesting story and a much more believable story about pre-colonial Australia.
What I found so staggering about your book and incredible was the primary sources, of course, you've gone to. This is a historical approach, and the fact that there was evidence of people describing, pretty sophisticated agriculture, farming, all of this at the time post-colonisation in a way that had never been documented before. And of course, there have been, contemporary historians that have looked at these things. Why did everyone miss it?
Well, perhaps they weren't looking for it. If you have something fixed in your mind about what you're going to find, perhaps you're not noticing the aberrations. And it was the aberrations that caught my eye. And obviously, my motivation was high, being an Aboriginal person and having accepted without question the history that my teachers and university professors had taught me. My motivation was high because I was a bit ashamed that I had so meekly accepted this relatively unbelievable story of occupation of the land.
You put forward a case for a total rethink of how we relate to land and the environment and by extension industry and capital. In another interview, you said the economy needs to be a blend of economy and spirit. What do you mean by that?
Well, I think the way we've farmed the land around the world in the last few hundred years has been to the detriment of the land. We're using chemical fertilisers, which will give you a bounce in production, but are gradually depleting the soils. The productivity of Australian soils has been gradually going down ever since colonisation. And younger people, younger farmers, younger botanists are now looking at this damage to the soil. Some areas of Australia have lost 13 metres of topsoil. This should be unacceptable to anyone who says they love the land. And we need to rethink how we use the land for the perpetuity of the land. You know, how are our grandkids going to farm? What are they going to farm if we keep destroying the soil? We have to rethink the whole thing. And because Aboriginal people were using perennial plants, they were binding the soil together. And those perennial plants have massive root systems relative to the annual crops. And so therefore, they're sequestering carbon because you don't plough. So no carbon is released into the atmosphere. And they're tapping deeper levels of moisture that the annuals can't connect with. So in terms of a drying climate, these are incredibly valuable resources.
A children's edition of Dark Emu has now been published. How did that come about?
Well, when we first started talking about the book Dark Emu, and Mugabala Books were fantastic in their reception of the book, it was obvious to me that so many people were saying, oh, look, I'm really interested in these ideas, but what am I going to teach my kids? How do I teach my kids these ideas? So very early in the process, we decided that we would be producing a children's edition, and Mugabala put together a terrific team of educators and writers and designers, and the book was released a fortnight ago, and we're thrilled with the reception.
I'm reading it with my young daughters at the moment, and it's really compelling reading. Should Dark Emu form part of the Australian school curriculum?
I think many books that look closely at the real history of the country should be part of that curriculum. Of course, I'd like to see Dark Emu there, but I would like to think that in the future there'd be many books on many themes, because there is so much to learn. The work that I cover in Dark Emu is a fraction of what we need to find out, and much of it is in the available historical records in Australia. They've just never been accessed in this way before.
So you're saying there's more to reveal, there's more work to be done.
Yeah, we need to have a thorough examination of the historical record, particularly in relation to where Aboriginal people are seen to be in contact with food and food growing, and analyse this, because my search was reasonably thorough, but I'm very aware that there's more to be found out. And I want to find that out for the sake of Aboriginal farming communities. And this is what we're trying to produce on the South Coast: Aboriginal people involved in growing their traditional foods. But we need more information, because culture is the first thing lost when dispossession occurs. So some of the skills, the knowledge that was kept in the mind of elders has not been lost. We don't like to use the word loss, but we need to revive it. We need to go back and talk to our elders, but we also need to look at the public record.
So it's you will do more of this work yourself, but you're essentially, it's a call to arms for historians to take this on.
Yeah, look, I'm saying to students, both black and white, around the country, you know, here's a greenfield estate. You could have a really exciting life not a rich life, but an exciting life, trawling through this information, because you're going to dig up gold every day. And that was my experience. And I'd look forward to others doing it as well. We need to have other people in the field. We need to grow the enthusiasm, and so that we can fully appreciate our country's story. Because by not understanding how Aboriginal people after 120,000 years manage the land, we're missing a trove of human knowledge. And we can see from the fact that a million fish died in our rivers over summer, we're doing something wrong. And it's so obvious what's wrong. We're using too much water. Mm. This country cannot produce that amount of water. We have a finite amount, and we have to use it better. So the best way to use it is to use plants that aren't as thirsty as cotton and rice and wheat.
Given this now has become, it's almost having its second moment, your book. Dark Emu was actually first printed in 2014, but it feels like it's become increasingly part of the national conversation. It's been a slow burn, hasn't it?
Yes, it didn't have any advertising. It had word of mouth. And it scares me a bit that people are so enthusiastic, because I've seen enthusiasms evaporate. Remember the Republican debate. One prime minister says no and it dies. I don't want that to happen here. Look what happened to the Uluru statement. One prime minister says it's no good or it's too ambitious and it dies. We can't afford to let this happen. So I appreciate everyone's enthusiasm and their excitement, but what we need is change. And it's not in Western literature, the author is celebrated. In Aboriginal cultural lore, the story is celebrated. I want people to concentrate on the story, and I want them determined that they will change the country for the better.
Is the fact that this part of our history has not been known, the history of, you know, the fact that Indigenous people in Australia had, you know, houses, that Indigenous people in Australia had built up communities, that Indigenous people in Australia had farming practices. They were different to farming, of course, in England, but they were farming practices. Is the fact that this has not been known contributed, do you think, to racism?
I think it's fundamental to it. I think this blindness, this deliberate blindness, has allowed people to sneer and jeer at Aboriginal Australia. With a better knowledge, we would have a better conversation. And I think it's the lack of the conversation between Aboriginal Australia and non-Aboriginal Australia which has affected things like morale in Aboriginal communities. And it's not just one way. It's also affected non-Aboriginal Australians' relationship with their country, because if you don't understand it, if you don't know what it's capable of doing, then your relationship with the land is deficient. And I hope we can correct these things, have a better conversation, so that if we're exasperated by the vast difference in Aboriginal life expectancy, we call in nurses and doctors, not the army. I think if we have a better conversation, we avoid that kind of knee-jerk, shallow reaction to a problem, because we know the problem is deeper than we first thought, and we can come up with more humane solutions, and we'll do it together. Black and white will do it together, because it seems for Australian governments, the last thing they want to do is actually discuss these problems with Aboriginal people. So many solutions could have been found, and the best solutions, as we were discussing in Darwin yesterday, have been brought up by Aboriginal people and delivered by Aboriginal people without government assistance. It seems sometimes that government is an impediment. Now, I don't believe that needs to be the case. Government work or should work on behalf of the people, so it's up to us to convince government this is what we want. This, as Australians, is how we want our country to be. We want a more just country. We want a more environmentally friendly country. And we want all Australians to benefit from the wealth of this great land.
I want to read a quote from you to you, and I want to explore what you meant. You say, "Be wary of the enthusiasm for us as wise and beautiful people when nothing changes for our children." What are you warning about there?
Well, you know, First Nation American Indians got their statues outside tobacco stores as a kind of a symbol of wildness or whatever it was. We don't want that to happen here. Palako used to have an Aboriginal man advertising their shirts. It was clearly a racist intent. We need a more intelligent discussion here, and Australia is capable of that more intelligent discussion. Despite all the government's lack of enthusiasm about solar power, Australians have adopted it. Left and right, Australians put solar panels on their roof because they know it makes sense. So I think this makes sense, and I think Australia thinks it makes sense. So we have to do this ourselves. And if government comes along with us and adopts our idea, then let's be gracious and say, oh, what a wise and beautiful government you are. But to allow Aboriginal people to continue to be diminished, their history to be unrelated to the Australian people, then we're going to be a less capable nation than we can be.
Bruce, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you for an interesting discussion.
Bruce Pascoe is the author of Dark Emu, Agriculture or Accident. There's also a children's version of the book with illustrations. It's called Dark Emu, A Truer History. And I recommend not only that you read the book if you haven't, because I promise you it's worth your time, but to read the book with your children too, which is what I'm doing. It is honestly a game changer. This is RN Drive.